anyone who dares stand up to an occupying federal force is going to be targeted and shot at and detained. It's now fighting against an authoritarian police state based on enforcing law and order, based on enforcing these kind of classical American values, based on, you know, old world ideas. And that ideology has a name, and the name is fascism.
I think that either Trump is trying to have a last hurrah, or as he's already said, he's not going to accept the November elections. I think he's going to try to just pull dictatorship and just stay no matter what.
Welcome to episode 10 of Inside Without Now, a podcast hosted by volunteers with refusefascism.org. I'm Sam, one of those volunteers. On the day we're airing this episode, July 26th, 2020, we've seen 60 days and nights of consecutive protests in Portland, Oregon. Originally motivated to act for justice for George Floyd, protesters have continued to come out night after night, saying Black Lives Matter, and demonstrating at the Justice Center downtown. But over the past couple weeks, Portland has become a flashpoint in Trump's overall plan of consolidating fascist rule. His acting secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf, has cobbled together a paramilitary force comprised of Border Patrol, ICE, and other federal agents, equipped with military-grade equipment, dressed in battle fatigues, and armed with assorted tear gas launchers, concussion grenades, and other munitions. These troops have staked themselves out in downtown Portland, assaulting protesters with huge quantities of these chemical weapons every night. At least one protester suffered a skull fracture, with many other severe injuries. It's also worth noting that tear gas is not necessarily non-lethal and has been banned from use in war. On top of the blatant and brutal violence that Trump's army has inflicted on protesters, they have also been grabbing people off the streets, sometimes for simply being in the vicinity of a protest, dragging them into unmarked rental vehicles and taking them away. To date, it appears this tactic is being used to intimidate people and a futile attempt to find something incriminating on the person of these kidnapped people in order to justify this illegitimate invasion. But in the face of this incredibly fascist escalation, the people of Portland have not backed down. In fact, the protests have become larger, broader, and more determined. Friday night, 10,000 were reported to be in the streets downtown, undeterred and continuing to chant Black Lives Matter, even as they were gassed yet again. As Trump has announced he's sending his goon squads to other Democratic Party-led cities this week, I'm taking a lot of heart from the courage of these people, and I hope you are too. It's crucial that we take to the streets wherever we are, not just to stand with Portland, not just to demand feds out of our cities, not just to demand Black Lives Matter, as righteous and correct as those demands are. We need to raise the demand that Trump and Pence must go now. As we'll discuss today with our guests, this escalation has everything to do with Trump, not just in staying in power, regardless of the results of the November election, but consolidating a different fascist form of rule in this country. For those of you still wondering whether we ought to use the F word, please listen to the voices on the ground in Portland today and heed their warning. We still have time, and there is still courage to tap into, but the hour is late. Refuse Fascism held protests around the country yesterday, including many of the cities targeted by Trump's Gestapo. If you are listening to this right now, you are needed. Please visit refusefascism.org to find out when and where you can next join in a protest to demand Trump Pence out now. You can also find resources to spread this movement in your area, regardless of whether there's a chapter already there. Now we're going to hear from a young independent journalist who has been reporting from the front lines for almost every night over the past few months. Garrison Davis at Hungry Bowtie has been documenting via Twitter and YouTube the brutality as well as the heroic resistance on the ground and shared his insights into what's been happening this past Friday night. Garrison, you are a video journalist in Portland. I just want to situate this a little bit, given the news, and then I want to hear your experience on the ground. This is going on now. What is it? Day 57, 58 of straight protests?
I think it could be 59 today, depending how you count it. Yeah.
Okay. So it could be 59 of straight days of heroic protests in Portland, righteously defying escalated repression by the fascist Trump-Pence regime. You have, in the face of federal and local police on Tuesday night, people protesting courageously in Portland. People have been able to see the growing diversity of people in the streets. You have the walls of moms, you have the walls of dads, you have the vets on the front lines stepping up to defend protesters against state repression. I wanted to say first and foremost that it's extremely positive that people from various backgrounds have come back stronger in the face of this vicious and violent repression and are in the streets night after night. A protester was recently telling me one of their chants was, "Together, stay tight, we'll do this every night." And I think that that's a really important spirit. I think that demonstrations of solidarity and manifestations of support are needed nationwide. You are in Portland. You've been to many of these protests. What have you been seeing on the ground?
Ever since early July, we've just seen a growing federal presence trying to quell or handle these protests, as the president said. And definitely when the first few nights that they were really out here with big shows of force, the crowd didn't know what to do. They were escalated to what the Portland Police Bureau was doing and then even surpassing it in some of the tactics they were doing, including there was the big story that kind of got Portland in the spotlight was the unmarked rental cars driving around and picking up protesters and detaining them. So a lot of what I would call intimidation tactics, a lot of stuff that really isn't meant to actually hurt people, but is meant to intimidate people so that they stop coming out. That's what we really saw the first week. That's why July 11th, which you already mentioned, was, I think, a really big show of force for the purpose of getting everyone feeling hopeless. And then 2 days later was the federal officers going around in the unmarked vans. So a lot of their tactics were really just to get like, everyone so brought down and feeling like they can't actually do any resistance. But after a week of being afraid, the fear kind of goes away and it turns into anger. And then it kind of has the opposite reaction, which is what we've seen in Portland the past week, is that people are now kind of energized and really angry about what's happening. So we're seeing the numbers grow to even surpassing what they were at the beginning of May. We're seeing 3,000 people out in the streets every night for like a week now. And this is the same, if not even bigger, than it was when these protests first started, centered around George Floyd in May.
Thank you for that. I think that this picture of thousands in the street coming back stronger in face of repression is something that is inspiring people across the country. A lot of people are wondering, what is the sense on the ground? What are you hearing people say? What are people feeling at these protests?
We've also seen a lot of conflict between different kind of ideas, how much to do active resistance versus passive resistance. But usually those conversations kind of die out as soon as the feds show up. And then either people who don't want to do active resistance will either leave or they'll just kind of feel like they need to take part. And then that's when we get like thousands of people, you know, actively resisting the federal government and their agents that are sent out into the streets. We have this giant umbrella wall, kind of how we've seen in Hong Kong, that constantly pushes back the federal troops. So there's a lot of tactics getting developed or getting kind of perfected, seeing a lot of different types of ways of handling things. And like, there's been calls for people with leaf blowers to show up. And then the past week, we've seen so many more leaf blowers. They're actually being very effective against crowd control agents and chemical weapons. We're seeing this still really develop and still grow. Narratives will be kind of moving around. Different tactics are always going to be used. A lot of the protest people are shifting back and forth between, hey, today we're going to be focusing on the federal courthouse and the feds. Tomorrow, we're going to go and do stuff with the Portland Police Bureau. when like the mayor, Ted Wheeler, shows up at the federal courthouse and gets gassed one day, I mean, he's also the police commissioner, and the Portland police gassed a residential neighborhood last Friday. We're seeing a lot of people try to make sure this stays focused on the Portland Police Bureau, trying to stay focused on Black Lives Matter, but also people needing to realize that, hey, we're also kind of stopping a growing police state and domestic fascism, and there's a lot of focus on specifically the federal occupying officers.
I had thought something similar when I had first seen the footage of the mayor being gassed. He almost seemed to not recognize the irony. In your experience on the ground, what have you seen protesters be subjected to by the feds?
I've been out there almost every night when the feds have been there, and there's been an enormous amount of tear gas. So much so, the city parks, when you walk in them now, you can just smell it in the air, lingering. There's been complaints from the jail next to the courthouse that there's getting tear gas drafted into the cells, and people choking on the ground and lay by the door so they can breathe air through under the crack in the door. Today, people in the federal courthouse had to be sent home because the federal courthouse itself is just reeking with tear gas because of how much gas these officers are using. And they can use it at their discretion. They all have gas masks on. They all have face shields. They don't care because they're not the ones working in the courthouse. They're not the ones working in these city buildings. They're not the ones walking through the Portland parks. They don't care. There's just been entire walls and clouds of tear gas just covering up sections of the city. I mean, it's not funny because it's very dark. When like American fascists were really going to take control, we didn't expect them to gas an entire city. Because that's what they're doing at this point. They're not using gas chambers. They're just gassing literally an entire section of downtown. Multiple city blocks, all filled with gas at the same time. Walls of it. Yesterday, I had literally carried someone out of a cloud of tear gas because they collapsed on the ground. We see this every night. So many canisters of tear gas. It's a ridiculous amount. You can't even fathom. It's hard to realize how much has been happening. You know, I'm just thinking back now and just kind of still in shock myself with how much tear gas I've seen. We're also seeing a lot of different types of impact grenades. They have a mix of stun grenades, which make a very loud sound and very bright light. If you're hit with those, you can get serious burn. Other types of grenades they have is pepper grenades, pepper bullets, you know, little paint balls kind of filled with tear gas, rubber bullets, other kind of impact rounds. You know, so you'd be tackled in clouds of tear gas and the federal officers holding them down in tear gas as they're going into a seizure. Someone's skull was fractured a few weeks ago because they were shot in the head with an impact round. But we see this stuff so constantly that everyone's becoming so desensitized to it, which is a problem, but it also means people are getting less afraid and we're more willing to resist, coming up with different ways of resist. The leaf blowers, the shield, there's evolving tech.
What do you think is giving people the strength to continue? Given what you've presented, a lot of people could say, okay, I'm done, but people have kept coming out. What do you think is the source of that strength?
I feel like a lot of it is can come down to anger, but anger, you know, anger isn't a bad thing. Something interesting that I know happened is that a lot of these moms that have kind of showed up, their kids have been getting tear gassed for months by the Portland police, but they didn't really know about it. Their kids don't talk to them. It didn't really get covered in the news because everyone was focusing on Seattle because of the chop. There's been federal restraining orders against the Portland police from attacking journalists because they attacked so many journalists. They have restrictions on how much tear gas they can use because they were gassing the whole city. All these moms kind of found out this happened because Portland got put in the national news, like, wow, all my kids have been getting tear gassed for months. I should show up with them. And so now I see teenagers in black block, you know, in their hoodies, and then their moms standing next to them with gas masks and wearing their yellow shirts, their dads coming out in these orange vests with leaf blowers. It's not a fun thing. No. Now, I'm sure these people would rather be not having to fight a secret police that is taking over the city. Whether we resist or not, we're going to be met with the same amount of force, which is what we saw on July 11th when people weren't resisting at all. And that's why it was so brutal, is because people were so passive that day and so much not engaging, not trespassing on federal property, not engaging with the officers. And they were still brutally subjected to violence by the law enforcement anyway. We may as well actually push back on them. So that's what we're kind of seeing this past week. And we've had a week of what I would consider to be like consecutive victories against the feds. A mobilized portion of Portland pushes and pressures these people back into the courthouse every time they come out to deploy tear gas in the city. Every time they come out to charge on the crowd, shoot people with impact rounds, we've consistently seen them being able to resist enough to keep pushing them back in their building. It's been very impressive to see this group that was kind of more disorganized at the start of the feds kind of coming here become highly organized, but organized in an autonomous way, not having actual leaders, just people falling into positions because there's a need for it, and people kind of working in this fluid hive mind almost.
in this period of time, you know, since it became more of a mainstream understanding of what was happening in Portland, well after July 11th, unfortunately, you had people like the New York Times columnist Michelle Goldberg write, protesters are being snatched from the streets without warrants. Can we call it fascism yet? There have been a lot of people talking about it being performative fascism, not yet fascism, the deployment of paramilitary units directly under the command of the Trump-Pence regime with the full backing of all federal law enforcement really does represent an extremely dangerous escalation of fascism and using what they're doing in Portland as a model to attack the masses of people in other cities, you know, especially liberal or democratic cities and cities with a large population of Black people, Cleveland, Detroit, Milwaukee, a lot of the places targeted. How do you see this escalation? What do you think this is about? What do you think that they're trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, I would like people to kind of listen to people that have actually studied what fascism is, because there's been many warning signs throughout the past. We talk about this as being how Portland's the training ground, you know, the first phase of this. But really, you can look at what ICE has been doing as either the same thing. That's the actual training. That's the actual kind of first thing. This is only the next step. It's like, first they came for the socialists, and they came for the communists, then they came for the Jews. It's like that progression. First they came for the immigrants. Now they're coming for people who support racial equality. They're just going to come from anyone who isn't part of them next. And that's what we're seeing in Portland now is, you know, first we have an ICE center here. You know, first they came for immigrants. Now these same people, because all of these federal troops, they're a mix of Border Patrol and DHS. A lot of these people are actually ICE officers that we're seeing. A lot of them are BORTAC. So we're seeing these very same people who are taking immigrants off the streets. Same people taking citizens of Portland off the streets, same people taking people at protests off the streets. And people who have not been affiliated with protests have also been taken off the streets just because they happened to be wearing Black clothing and were in a certain section of downtown, but they weren't actually affiliated with the protest. So we're seeing the same pattern. And now we have a whole bunch of people out here who are liberals or centrists, or even some people that are like conservatives, be like, hey, yeah, I just don't appreciate that these federal officers are occupying my state. And now we're seeing, you know, them targeted. So now it's just anyone who dares stand up to an occupying federal force is going to be targeted and shot at and detained in unmarked cars. It's now fighting against an authoritarian police state based on enforcing law and order, based on enforcing these kind of classical American values, based on, you know, old world ideas. And that ideology has a name, and the name is fascism. This is a term, and we should use it correctly. It's not just a hyperbolic word. There's a definition for this, and what we're seeing right now fits.
I really appreciate your clarity. I think that there becomes a time with fascism that we have the historical examples that the people in Germany did not have. There does become a time where it's too late. And so people acting with that understanding now could make all the difference for humanity. Are people learning from the rebellions around the world we've seen over the past few years, the tactics from the umbrellas that we saw in Hong Kong, but also mobilizing all sections of people like moms and dads? What have you noticed from uprisings in other parts of the world that have been informative?
We definitely have seen a big influence of the tactics seen in Hong Kong being used here. It started out kind of just more the aesthetics. You know, we saw people carrying around leaf blowers back in May, but there was like one dude that wasn't really being useful. We've seen people carrying around cones to extinguish tear gas, and you know, that's good on its own. We've seen people mention the idea of flow like water, which is like referring to like moving throughout the streets in a unpredictable way to try to like elude law enforcement towards where you are. So making a series of consecutive turns in a pattern that is not detectable to like maintain an unnoticed nature towards police that are trying to chase you down. So we saw mentions of these things happening in May, but I would say really July is the month that I've seen these tactics actually used and used effectively. So there's probably about 30 leaf blowers out last night. And eventually it just looks like the feds are just tear gassing themselves, because all the tear gas is just getting blown back in the courthouse very effectively. It was quite astonishing to watch. And I can understand why now people who work in this federal building who can't, because the tear gas keeps going back into the section where they're deploying it. The cones have continued to be used. You know, you put a cone over top of a canister and pour water in the top, and that extinguishes the canister. And flow like water has been used. But when this group was trying to like get away from the police, they dispersed into these residential streets extremely effectively, so much so that me and my the team of journalists I was with couldn't even find them ourselves. And we're usually pretty good at tracking the group. The shield wall has been really effective the past few days. I mean, I have videos of explosives being thrown at the shield wall and then bouncing off, bouncing 10 feet away, then exploding, which is the way the shield wall is supposed to be used. That's been extremely effective. Very rarely has tear gas kind of passed over the shield wall. That's been really interesting to see. It's a mix of wood, plastic, umbrellas. So yeah, those are the kind of tactics we've seen. Original tactics that I've seen develop is specifically this wall of moms thing. As far as I can tell, pretty unique to Portland. Sometime last week, you know, a few moms came out, it was like 40 moms, and they all got tear gassed. And then they decided to organize, this was then written about the next day, and then they decided to organize a bigger thing and keep everything coordinated. Next day, we had 300 moms come out, all wearing yellow, all linking arms, standing in front of the federal troops, in between the federal troops and the protesters. And that definitely had an effect on the behavior of the federal officers and how and when they decided to get violent. I mean, they still did, but it was extremely effective. A lot of times, federal officers charge out and grab people in the front and then pull them back in. The moms is very effective against that, because if they do that to like this group of 40-year-old mothers and people are filming, that's very bad optics, even for fascists. That's going to look extremely bad. And the next day was 500, next day was 600, 700. It just keeps getting bigger every day. This giant mass of moms all wearing yellow. And this particular tactic of using your white privilege as a literal body shield, I've not seen really used anywhere.
There are things that are reminiscent of Hong Kong, but you can also see a lot of innovation of people struggling on the spot to figure out how to protect people. And it's a very, you know, compelling thing to watch. I wanted to end with kind of a multi-part question. Are the neighborhoods being attacked also, or are the feds just provoking people near the federal courthouse?
So as far as I can tell, most of the feds are stationed by the federal courthouse. Portland Police Bureau seems to be mainly responding to all of the actions in other parts of the city. However, there was in the same protest that this police union building was, a few hours previous to that, protesters were stationed at one of the North Precincts, like one of the police buildings, and there was a truck of feds there. Me and another journalist got a tip that there was like a pickup truck full of federal officers, and we walked over, and yeah, we saw them. So there were some stationed there, but it seems like for their actual response, they've stuck to around the federal courthouse. Again, still marching blocks away from federal property, like not staying in the courthouse, still going far out into Portland streets. I was talking to one of the people that lived downtown in like an old folks apartment. This person came down and was kind of yelling at the feds, and I talked to them afterwards. I'm like, yeah, I live here with 70 other seniors and we just keep getting tear gassed downtown, and lots of us have breathing issues, lots of us have like, you know, all these kind of things, and they just keep sending tear gas in downtown. So like, important, like downtown isn't just these luxury shops. It's also where people live, and it's also where low-income housing can be because of these special types of apartments. So when, you know, when the feds are marching into downtown Portland, blocks away from the courthouse, and they're sending tear gas out, they're not just tear gassing a whole bunch of rowdy teens. They're also tear gassing apartments full of seniors, apartments full of people with children, people who have special needs, people who have breathing conditions. We're in a pandemic right now that is a respiratory illness. And they're tear gassing thousands of people, multiple blocks of Portland. I've seen regular cars get tear gassed and drive wildly into the crowd because they can't see anything. Even if you're just standing there and chanting and not throwing a water bottle over the fence at the police, you're still going to get tear gassed. If you're living in an apartment one block away, you're still going to get tear gassed. If you're driving to work, you're still going to get tear gassed. Everyone's getting attacked. And I think part of why we have so many people now out here is just because everyone's getting affected by this. They're like, oh, wow, this is going to keep happening to my city until I put some kind of stop to it. Most effective way to stop it is to join them and actually just fight these people until they leave.
In Chicago, a major attention point for this regime, the mayor has announced that she'll cooperate in integrating Trump's Gestapo into the existing repressive apparatus. CPD is already notorious for its brutality and murderous violence against Black and brown people, so this is anything but a good thing. Do you have any lessons for how this may play out in Chicago and other cities if local authorities try to collaborate or conciliate with these federal troops?
I mean, we saw the police in collaboration with the feds for the first few weeks. They're now claiming to be not in collaboration, but we'll see if that holds up to evidence when, you know, this continues. I'm not going to lie, it's going to be bad. It's going to be tough. It's going to be really rough, especially for the first bit. I think one reason why Portland's handled itself so well is because we've just had nonstop protests of notable size. So people have been able to keep these tactics going, develop tactics, and be able to realize what their role is. If you're starting from the ground up when these people are just occupied your city, it's going to be very difficult. You can take inspirations from what you've seen in other cities, make sure everyone has a role. Not everyone needs to be doing the same thing. We don't need everyone with a shield up in front. We don't need everyone all throwing tear gas. We don't need everyone all being the people chanting in the back, because every tactic has its purpose and every tactic is useful. And this is how we've seen successful protests happen in the past. Know what you're good at and do that. Know where your limits are. Know what your kind of risks are. Don't feel bad if you have to take a day off to rest. If you feel like you need to help put a stop to something that you don't like happening, go into the streets if you want to. If you don't want this to happen, there seems to be really only one way to effectively stop it, and is to actually go out there and do something about it. That's what we've seen in Portland. If you don't give up when things feel the worst, eventually stuff is going to get better and things will improve. Their goal is to frighten you into not wanting to go out. That's their most effective tactic. That's the tactic they want to do the most, is just scare you enough that you feel like it's not worth going out. If you really want to resist something, that's the main thing you have to resist right now, is the urge to just kind of feel like there's no getting past it. Because the important part is, like, how many millions of people does Chicago have? I do know there's more people in Chicago than there will be federal occupying forces. There's going to be more people that have the ability to resist than the people that are trying to kind of stop that resistance from happening. If we keep getting thousands of people out every night, that's how we have our best chance. The alternative is kind of living in a police state, and you have to figure out, yeah, I think it's worth fighting against that, even if you're going to be shot with a rubber bullet.
I want to thank you so much, Garrison, for your time, and commend you for your tremendous courage and your conviction, and for being out there and making sure that the world sees what's happening in Portland. Everything that you've shared underscores the urgency of confronting the fascist nature and program and danger of the Trump-Pence regime, and of building mass sustained nonviolent protests to drive the Trump-Pence regime from power now, not waiting for the election. So I want you to stay safe as you can be. We look forward to continuing to see your videos and following you on Twitter. That was Garrison Davis, an independent journalist in Portland. You can follow him at Hungry Bowtie on Twitter, and we'll link to his YouTube channel in the show notes. Before the next interview, I want to share with you an excerpt from Three Questions on Resistance to the Federal Crackdown in Portland by Coco Das. You can read the full article at refusefascism.org. Why are you waiting for this to come to your city instead of flooding the streets now to say no to a fascist police state? The people of Portland have responded appropriately. Resistance has grown, with the Wall of Moms and others taking a righteous stand against the divide and conquer slander that the feds have to go and take over liberal cities to protect its citizens from domestic terrorists. Too many outside of Portland, while taking inspiration from this, have said the equivalent of, get ready for when this happens to your city. This is a hammer coming down on your right to dissent, and the time to stop it is now. The forces cohered around Trump have seen him accomplish what they've wanted for decades, confirming a record number of pro-fascist judges and voicing the grievances of a population that can't stand the social progress of the last 50 years. And they will not give up power easily. What's happening in Portland should tell you that you've waited long enough. She also asks and answers, what makes you think you can vote this out? How many hints do you need that Trump may not step down if he loses the election? Ever since he won the last election, the regime has been laying the groundwork to declare any defeat illegitimate. He just did it again in his Fox News interview with Chris Wallace. And if the results are contested, whose hands will be on the levers of power to enforce his removal? They are showing you now those levers of power will be deployed not to stand by the Constitution or maintain peace by marching Trump and Pence out of the White House, but to brutally put down any uprising of the people. The Democrats cannot be relied on to stop this. Even now, as they come under ruthless political attack and face constant erosion of the rule of law, the Democratic leadership will not call for Trump's resignation and will not call their base into the streets to demand an end to all this. And what will you do if he wins? I encourage you to read the full article by Coco Das, Three Questions on Resistance to the Federal Crackdown in Portland, at refusefascism.org. Next, we'll hear from a protester, musician, and writer, Sam Bones. SamBones.com, Sam with two M's. She's also been in the streets almost every night during the Portland uprising. I started by asking her to describe what she's seen on the ground in Portland.
I want people to know that we have up to 2,000 people every night standing side by side as the majority of strangers standing for one cause and one cause only, that Black Lives Matter. And we all are risking our lives every day, not only by the pandemic, by police brutality and the Fed, the quote unquote Fed's terrorism, domestic terrorism. And we need to start calling it what it is. It is domestic terrorism. And we are out every single day and every single night standing side by side, risking our lives for this. And we want everyone to know that they need to start preparing for the same infiltration that will come to your city. I wrote an article recently called A Letter from a Peaceful Protester, and I'll kind of just highlight the bullet points of what I wrote in that. Essentially, during the day, we have everywhere from 2 to 5 different protests with or without direct action. Everywhere from skill shares to youth groups, youth movements, sharing all of their wonderful speakers. We have BIPOC leaders, both from the ages of 9 to our elders, speaking up and speaking their stories. I get the honor to hear them every day. We all do. I've been encouraging to uplift their voices, and they finally get this platform. During the day, we have either these skill shares or sit-ins or demonstrations of whatever sort, with or without a march. And you can go to almost every corner of the city, and there is one, whether it's in the northwest, southeast, north, you'll find one near you. There's two sides of your protesters. You have your peaceful protesters. Everyone's peaceful, I shouldn't say that, but you have your participants, and then you have the people that are corking or guarding and making sure that everything goes smoothly. And then you have your organizers, right? I'm on the other side of things. I am the person that's usually making sure that there's no bodily harm happening. So from my perspective, I get to watch all of these people have a barricade around them to host this very safe, peaceful, beautiful demonstration every day. And then at 7:30 at night, we all gather at the Justice Center. Just 3 weeks ago, we were down to double digits. And by the time 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock rolled in, they would usually come out, do a round of arrests. You know, we would hold ground as much as we could, but we did not have nearly as many numbers. I think a little bit over a week ago, the Rolling Stone and the Times, after being written to several times, many people had to drag them by the claws to get their attention. We finally got their attention, and they wrote a couple of articles about the unmarked cars that with the feds. I need to stop calling them feds. This is Trump's army. They're not feds. These are not trained. We have to use the right vocabulary and call it what it is. So Trump's army in unmarked cars going around abducting people is the word that we've been using. So we finally got attention, but they said that it had been happening for 2 days. It had been happening for a week prior to those articles coming out. But that has instigated a lot of support on all sides. So now you go downtown at 9 o'clock. By the time 9 o'clock rolls around, and you'll see 2,000 people in solidarity. You'll see your wall of moms. We now have dads that have joined. They have leaf blowers, which gets rid of a lot of the tear gas. It's very effective. I don't know who thought of that, but I am so grateful for them.
I mean, I see the videos and I think, oh, what a beautiful act. There's this video that one journalist got of this grandfather that came from, I think, Seattle to help out. And it's just this incredibly moving thing. But in my head, I'm thinking, I wonder if this even is effective. But
it actually is. When it comes to the tear gas, when a canister goes over, we'll have a team show up with a cone with water, and then the leaf blower comes out, and we have it all just very fluent, figured out. Those are not actual teams. Everyone just knows their roles. And so they have found a very effective way to utilize those leaf blowers against the tear gas. And with the umbrellas up front and the tear gas leaf blowers, that really has actually died down a lot of the gas. So around 9 o'clock, you'll see about 2,000 people. And we have riot ribs. They're there. They're cooking free ribs, all donation-based. We have a lot of African-American-based, well, I shouldn't say just African-American, BIPOC-based artists out there, and people selling their shirts and their goods and just sharing like stories and music. And it's just so beautiful. And all of these young people, just beautiful, beautiful young people, finally have this platform. And they get on those megaphones they finally have this voice and they're utilizing it so well. And it just gives me chills. I couldn't imagine being 9 years old, standing up in front of 1,000 people and telling them how their story and saying, I'm here because I don't want to be next. And I don't want my mom and dad to be next, and to be able to say that. And for that emotional vulnerability to thousands of strangers, it's incredible. And that's why I'm there every night, for that little girl that said that the first night I was there, and all of the people that continue to be there. Now, this peaceful scene is usually declared a riot by 10:30. This is kind of what the pattern we've noticed of being on ground every night. 10:30, they usually start gassing. Now, to give you an idea, the Justice Center's windows were all busted out and they have plywood everywhere. And in the plywood, they have slots that they can open from the inside out. Little windows. They can open it and they will throw the tear gas through those slots. Meanwhile, during that time, they usually come in some strategic formation in some part of the park to push us out. So they'll throw the gas out and then they will shoot rubber bullets through these slots, essentially, until they come out. Lately, they've just been coming out onto the steps. And before that barricade was up, they were attacking people and they would do like strategic one shots of each person and pick people off and then strategically take people off of the front lines and beat them and detain them. Now with a cage, that is just, we're just getting gassed a lot and we are getting shot at, lots of flashbangs. And then they come out usually around midnight and they push us. Last night was a pretty good routine of theirs, was when they come from the east side and they push us east, and then they bring like another round of riot cops from the south. And so they try to corner us. And then they go around with riot vans and start detaining people. And you know, this entire time they are tear gassing people, they are shooting rubber bullets, they are throwing flashbangs, which sound like bombs for those that don't know. So that is usually the end of the night. During this time as a de-escalator protester, I'm going around and either solving inner conflict or doing eye flushes or helping people to the medics or offering protection, anyone that needs escorting and doesn't feel safe. And then we have our front liners with the shields that are taking the brunt of the rubber bullets, while the majority of us stay back just behind them, but don't let them push us too far back unless it's dangerous. And, you know, the majority of this last few nights, we've been winning. We have strength in numbers. We get them back into that building by the time 2 o'clock rolls in. It's really beautiful. And we've all figured out our roles. We've all figured out who to listen to and what to listen to. Last night was beautiful, like the way that everybody had their shields out and their umbrellas out, and then the medics were standing by. We all had our positions. We were moving as one. It was completely fluent and it was beautiful. And there was tears in my eyes, and it was from the gas as well as my emotional state at that time.
I think that there's like a dynamic of not being deterred and not being provoked.
Yes.
You know, not backing down.
Love it.
And not being provoked. Do you know what I mean? Because I think that some people incorrectly, unlike you, you're out in the streets, you're joining protests, you're finding ways to keep remembering why you got in the streets in the first place. And I think for some people, it's an excuse to do nothing. They'll say, well, I don't want this to be the reason why they drop the hammer. I mean, they're going to do this anyway because they're trying to consolidate fascism. But right. I think that there's something of, we'll be nonviolent. What they're going to do is going to be the aggressor of violence, in the same way that, in my opinion, law enforcement has always been. That's what they do in the world. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is something to saying, you know, standing strong in our political conviction and not being provoked in a way that can only do harm to our goals.
We have to let them be the escalators. They want blood in our hands so they can escalate it to where they come in and do mass detains, where they're still knocking on our doors and just arresting people and putting us away.
Are people learning from uprisings around the world we've seen over the past few years? Like tactics, the umbrellas from Hong Kong, I saw. But then people are also mobilizing all sections of people, like moms and dads, you know, mm-hmm. that you talked about earlier. What tactics do you think people are learning from?
We all learn from each other. Definitely what I wear is literally what Hong Kong protesters were wearing when they took over the airport. just not even that long ago. I watched them in awe. I was like, these are my heroes. this is so beautiful. And my heart goes out to them right now. They're having such a tough time right now, but paying attention to that. And then of course, Portland is very passive. We have our artistic performance things going on as well. I'm learning all the time. The other day I messaged my old school anarchist guru from back in the day. And I asked her if they had any advice for me. And she said, no, I'm learning from you. And that both terrified me and I felt so much honor. And I was so overwhelmed at that moment. But that's where we're at. We're on unprecedented ground right now. And we're all just kind of learning on the fly from each other.
I spoke to someone before this interview and got their take on it. But there's a difference between journalists and on that ground support work that you're doing. Are the neighborhoods being attacked also, or are the feds just provoking people near the federal courthouse?
Essentially, what has shifted in the last week or so is that the feds seem to have taken over the downtown, the Justice Center, and the courthouse where we protest. And then when we do neighborhood protests, it seems like we just have cops in riot gear. So I think because they were spread thin, because we were doing so many different protests all over the city and kind of stringing them thin. Purposefully, obviously. Yeah, so we have mostly the Portland Police Bureau out in neighborhoods, and they have pretty much dissipated from the scene. I have not seen a police force downtown in probably a week.
And you haven't seen Trump's army people in neighborhoods?
I personally have not. Now, they have been spotted just transporting from their Marriott hotel room out in unmarked cars. And they have been seen not in uniform, knocking on people's doors. And that has been a big concern. They are doing facial recognition and they are finding where protesters are living.
Do you think there is a connection between the deployment of Trump's army in cities with the November elections?
I think that either Trump is trying to have a last hurrah, or as he's already said, he's not going to accept the November elections. To me, I think he's going to try to pull a Putin. I think he's going to try to just pull dictatorship and just stay no matter what. I don't discourage people to vote, but I do think that that's not even relevant anymore. So he's either having a last hurrah or he's just doesn't really care anymore. And he's moving towards full dictatorship.
Yeah, I think that one can easily envision how these federal paramilitary forces could be, if this is the preparation for what you're talking about, how they could be kind of more prepared if there were mass protests against his illegitimate moves around the election. Let's say he contested it or just flat out said, I'm not going to leave. If this has already been something that he's battle tested in multiple cities, I think this could be potentially very dangerous.
I know it's scary and I know it's tough right now. And I know a lot of our emotional states are fragile already because of the pandemic, but we are having an uprising right now. The only way that things can stay peaceful is if we have numbers and we need the critical masses to peacefully protest, that we are all safe in numbers. If you leave it up to only 100 of us like it was 3 weeks ago, someone's going to get killed. We have to stick together. And if you aren't someone that's a frontliner, that's okay. You don't have to be right there with a shield or an umbrella or a medic. There is a role for you.
Thanks for tuning in to Inside Without Now. Be sure to subscribe to hear more and rate and review to connect others with the movement to drive out the Trump Pence regime. As it says in refusefascism.org's call to protest Trump's Gestapo, no terrorizing Black communities, no fascist police state, Trump Pence out now. This is a dress rehearsal for full out militarized fascist police state, not political theater. It is a dangerous advance from a regime that has declared their determination to crush the opposition and hammer in their rule by terror and brute force. Fascism has direction and momentum. Dissent is piece by piece criminalized. The truth is bludgeoned. Group after group is demonized and targeted along a trajectory that leads to real horrors. All of this has taken dramatic leaps under the Trump House regime. History has shown that fascism must be stopped before it becomes too late. If we lose the right to protest by legal or extra legal means, all bets are off. As Trump unleashes his secret police, what will you do? Will you accept a fascist America? Will you stand aside, hoping that politics as usual will remove a regime that is subverting elections and using the military to crush dissent and further terrorize Black people? Or will you join us in the streets and stay in the streets to demand Trump Pence out now? You can continue reading the statement in full and find out how you can get involved at refusefascism.org. To spread this demand right now, donate. You can Venmo refuse-fascism, give via Cash App, Refuse Fascism, or go to the website, refusefascism.org. Follow at Refuse Fascism on social media and join us in raising the demand, Trump Pence out now. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. See you in the streets soon.